Hey guys, hope you're having a great day wherever you are. I am so excited to bring you this next interview. You know, while we cover a ton of current event headlines on smarternews.com, I think taking a big step back and listening to someone like our next guest can offer incredible insight, not only to what we see and read on a regular basis, but also some invaluable insight to life. So here's how this interview came about. During the funeral of former First Lady Barbara Bush, one photograph in particular became a bit of a viral sensation. In fact, I'm pretty sure you've probably seen it. It was President George H.W. Bush in his wheelchair, surrounded by other former presidents and first ladies. They included President George W. Bush and his wife, Laura, President Clinton and his wife, Hillary, President Obama and his wife, Michelle, and current First Lady, Melania Trump. Now, President Trump did not attend, and that's not unusual. Typically, from what we've seen over the last several decades, sitting presidents do not attend the funerals of first ladies, but first ladies do attend the funerals of their predecessors. And presidents don't attend for a series of different reasons. One, just to avoid any current political or partisan controversy being part of an event like a funeral, but perhaps more importantly, the security needs of the president can really distract or change the events. And so not wanting to do that, the presidents don't attend, and President Trump was like other presidents in the past. So at the funeral, though, this family photo is taken, and the man who captured it is a photographer by the name of Paul Morse. And I read about him in Time magazine and a brief write-up about the photo online, and I thought, you know, this guy sounds really interesting. So I dug into his background, and it became so clear that Paul has such a unique experience. So I emailed him, and lucky for us, he agreed to do an interview. So here we go. You know, we go through his entire bio in the podcast, but here are the three things I think you should know about him. Paul Morse has been working as a photographer for decades. He was at the funeral for former First Lady Barbara Bush because he has a relationship with the Bush family. He worked in the White House as a White House photographer for President George W. Bush. But what's more surprising about Paul is that he has an established working relationship with the Clintons as well. And he's also photographed President Obama. So you see, he's bipartisan in his work and in his experience with some of the most powerful men and women in the world. And that's really, really rare. You know, Paul certainly has incredible talent. You can see that in his photos. And he has a lot of perseverance, which you're going to hear about. To become a working photographer or working photojournalist is not easy. But it was a twist of fate that brought him to the position to work for President Bush. A simple phone call. And that one phone call led to something else, and that led to something else, and here we are. So his photos will play a huge role in how we remember the Bush presidency and the life of the presidency for both President Bush and President Clinton after they left office. We discussed all of this, from Paul's favorite photo to his politics and whether or not you have to be a Republican to work in a Republican White House. I didn't know the answer to that. Or how to capture Beyonce and Paul Ryan in a photo at the same time. Paul did it. It's incredible. And he talks to us about that. Clearly, Paul loves his craft, but he's honest about both its ability to illuminate and to limit what we see and how we see it. And I really appreciate his candor on what it's like to sit with these remarkable leaders when the cameras are off, and what we should know about how information is reported versus the reality within a White House. You see, Paul was very much a part of the White House as an insider. He was part of the White House team, but his position as a photographer made him a silent observer, which in some ways also made him an outsider. And his ability to float in between people and moments in history grants him such a unique voice and perspective. And I am so grateful he said yes to speaking with us. So I included the photos we discuss in our conversation on both our Instagram account and on smarternews.com. But you can see them all at paulmorse.com. That's Paul, P-A-U-L. And Morse, Paul says, like Morse code, M-O-R-S-E, paulmorse.com. So definitely check out his website, especially if you're looking for a wedding photographer. That's a twist of the conversation that you'll hear about. We're not going to forget this conversation anytime soon. I hope you don't forget this conversation. And speaking of which, you know, with so much to cover, where do you begin? I really struggle with that. So we start with the burning and basic question, a question I've had for a long, long time. Take a listen.
What is the secret to taking a good photograph?
I believe the secret is it's all in the person's eyes that you're photographing. I mean, I like to photograph people and moments and things like that. And so to me, the secret is capturing something in the person's eyes, you know, whatever emotion it is, or if it's a nice portrait, that sparkle in their eye, it's such a subtle thing but it makes all the difference in the world. And I think that's the key thing to make a good photo, you know, looking, or to create a good photograph, or to capture the essence of someone, is look in their eyes.
Does everyone have that sparkle? Or do
you
think people?
No, but it could be something that's just the opposite, that tells the story mm-hmm. for that particular thing. Because I have a background in news photography. I have a degree in journalism, and then have always worked up until 2001 as a newspaper photographer. And I've only been a photographer for almost now 30 years. And so whatever the story is, or where you're trying to say the emotion, it all kind of comes into the eyes, or right there. And when I'm editing pictures too, I will look at the eyes first. Out of all the pictures, you know, going through, I go right to the eyes. And that usually tells me if it's a good picture or not.
So you led me to a whole bunch of different questions, because I was reading your bio. Uh-huh. I just want to read it for people.
Okay,
I'm just going to read the first paragraph. Following a successful photojournalism career at the Los Angeles Times, Paul served as a White House photographer documenting the lives of President George W. Bush and his family. From his experience at the White House, he has gained the trust of additional presidents and their families, documenting President Obama's inaugurations and serving as a lead photographer for the Clinton Global Initiative. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot missing there. Right? So just let's take the first sentence. Following a successful photojournalism career at the Los Angeles Times. Let's stop there.
Okay.
How did you become a photographer?
It goes way back to junior high. I took a photography and bicycling summer school class, and was hooked when I first developed film, and then made a print in the darkroom. You know, you put the negative in, shine it on a piece of photographic paper, and then it, you know, it appears in the developer. And that first picture that came up, I was hooked from that moment on, because it was a way of capturing a moment. It was a simple action shot of kids playing basketball at a school, but just to be able to capture a moment in time and make a print, something you could share, and I was hooked. And so I knew way back then that that's what I wanted to do, and, you know, set myself on that path, going to high school, doing stuff at the yearbook, and then working for the local paper when I lived in Santa Monica, California, and then through college, doing internships around the country at newspapers, and then eventually getting a job in Southern California at a small paper in Pasadena for about 5 years, and then at the Los Angeles Times.
Wow.
And it was a fantastic career. I mean, I loved working in that environment, or in that those situations, and being able to capture moments firsthand, and then be able to share them ultimately, because that's what we do at the newspaper, is bring those stories to people and have them printed and published.
That must have been thrilling.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
To see that on a regular basis, absolutely. So you're at the Los Angeles Times. You're having this great career as a photojournalist. So fill in the missing link there, because that's a big leap from going there to being like, oh, I'm going to be at the White House and photographing the president. How did that happen?
It happened by a very good friend of mine from college, a person named Eric Draper. He and I worked at the same paper in Pasadena and kind of crossed paths after graduating. And he called me out of the blue after, at the time, Governor Bush finally was declared the winner in the election. And that time was very short between the transition between when he was named the president and when they had to fill all the staff positions at the White House. It was shortened dramatically. So Eric called me just out of the blue, he said, "Hey, would you want to come to DC and help me start up the White House photo office?" And I was like, "Yeah, let me give it a shot." And I only went out there to try it out for just a couple days. And I was so moved by how well they treated me at the White House, and starting from the president on down, and that I knew that this was going to be a unique opportunity to take.
So tell me about that first meeting with the president.
Yeah, that was interesting. We were I was there to photograph the first family before they were going to go to the inaugural balls, and I had my light set up in the blue room at the White House, ready to take the picture, and they. All of a sudden, the president walks in. He comes right to me directly and introduces himself as, "Hey, hi, this is, I'm George W. Bush. I really appreciate you coming all the way from California to take these pictures for my family." And I, you know, shook his hand, looked him right in the eye, and thinking to myself, it's like, I know who you are. You don't need to introduce yourself. And so I asked Eric, I said, "Well, when did you tell him my story?" And he goes, "Oh, like a few days ago." So I'm thinking, here he's just been sworn in, you know, as president, given an address, you know, to the, you know, at the inauguration, and came in and remembered enough about me just to mention and thank me. And to me, that was very, very impressive. And not to say that, you know, that people are really good at in the political realm of remembering those details, but it made a big impression on me. And I thought, well, this is going to be a unique opportunity with a person who I felt had a really great character and that I'd be willing to change my life for.
Do you think that changed the way you photographed him from that point on?
It took a long time to get to know him. And I had a lot of admiration for what he had for me and the graciousness that he showed. And so he worked really hard to try to make him happy. Ultimately, that's what we all did there. Our role was to support the president and to make him happy. And so I lent my talents to documenting him, the White House, First Lady, and to make him ultimately happy, but also to develop a great archive of pictures that would be preserved by the National Archives through his library that generations of people could go back and look at.
And you had no idea at that moment. I'm just sort of reflecting back at that time, because it's easy to forget what happened during that presidency. But at the beginning, we had no idea of what President Bush would face or we would face as a nation. And so that, just to have an understanding of some of the historical moments that you documented, that must have been pretty incredible.
It was, yeah. It was kind of a heady experience to be there and be in that, a fantastic environment, a beautiful environment. And then to be there where some really important decisions were being made. And, you know, I came from California, like I mentioned, where I covered Hollywood quite a bit. And L.A. is a kind of a town where it's a company town of, you know, ideas and make-believe. And there in Washington, well, the people may not be as attractive. The decisions they make actually affect a lot of people. So being in that environment was really very interesting. And it actually felt pretty natural, that I've always was impressed, but by having that strong impression of what it meant, I treated it with an utmost amount of care and respect because I represented the president of the United States. And that was, that meant a lot to me. It meant a lot to the president because he expected everyone to treat people really, really well. And so, it had a big effect on the way I did my job in every way.
I was always curious about the teams and how they set up a team, because I should mention that you actually were the deputy director of photography at the White House, right? So do you, when you're on this sort of a team, do you have to politically align with the person that you're covering? How does that work where they build the teams? Not only for the best product, because clearly they need a good product. We need good photographs. For the nation, but also politically, there is a political agenda. And I have no idea how that's set up. How is that even, is it approached at all? Do you talk about it? Or is it part of the screening process? Or how is that even dealt with?
You know, I think it wasn't dealt with in the first term because they didn't have time.
Right.
they needed to get good people. And I think they relying on the people who had offices to bring in the best people they thought would work. And the political side of it was never really brought up. I mean, honestly, I didn't vote for then the governor at the time. I had voted for Democrat, I guess, or Clinton and all, but no one ever asked me that. But in the second term, they kind of wanted to make sure that, yeah, you were kind of on the team, and they kind of checked to see where what party you're registered in. And it wasn't so much for the political, you know, the political reason wasn't the reason I went there, the political ideology. It was more about documenting history, and it never really came up at all. And it was something I would try to explain to people after I left, because it was right in the middle of a very contentious election period with President Obama running against President McCain. And I left to go out on my own in 07 from the White House, and everyone was pretty down on President Bush and in all aspects of it. But I would try to say, hey, I wasn't there to do political things. I was there to document. And I say, no one ever asked me my opinion in the Oval Office of things. So you can't put that impression on me because of it for the political reasons. And, you know, I have my thoughts and about politics, but I tried to keep it very in the middle. And, you know, after leaving the White House, and even when I was there, to try to keep an open perspective on it. And that, I'd say, was probably one of the most interesting things about going to DC, was to see what I thought the truth was from being told as a journalist or reading and stuff like that, or in the way people actually are. And I found it was just the opposite.
Right.
And it was very interesting, and I think probably one of the most valuable parts of it.
So what would your advice be then, having been on the inside and actually witnessing events that then you're watching being reported, sometimes using your photos, by the way, because they become part of, and that's something kind of interesting to know, that when it's a government employee, for example, in what I'm doing now, I can use some of those photos. They're part of the public domain. So your photos get used by a lot of different people in a lot of different settings. And so what did you learn, and what do you think we should consider having the inside perspective?
You know, I think when you see pictures released by any president, it goes through a filter, and it goes through a lot of different approvals and stuff. And yeah, you want to make that particular person, the president, look good or tell the right story. So it isn't a unvarnished look, you know, just so to say, at so speak, of who they are. And we were no different than President Obama or, you know, President Trump or even President Clinton. It's,
sure.
It's kind of the same thing. I took my journalistic and documentary skills and apply them to make the president look good, you know, or to tell a story. And the politics really, I can't say it is involved in any picture you see that doesn't come from the press. And I know we got a lot of heat when we were there from the White House press corps and the White House press photographers about not having enough, us releasing a lot of pictures, you know, of what the president does, kind of like you described. And I think we understood the need why they did that. But when the President Obama came, when President Obama came into office or was elected, they took it to a far extreme where they released a lot of Pete Souza's pictures, which are really, really good. And there's no criticism of Pete at all. I think he has the same type of background as me, as a newspaper photographer. But by not having, the press corps was even more upset because they didn't get to go in and document the behind the scenes type thing as much as they got to do under President Bush. And I believe this, it's good to have an independent eye on the president,
right?
Because everyone could see something a little bit different, and we'll take a perspective that's independent of what the White House is saying.
Interesting.
And
so look at
really
a couple
important.
Look at a couple different photos. It's interesting you bring up Pete, because I follow him on Instagram, and he's very out in front when it comes to politics, and he has a very, you know, very specific persona. It's very different than yours. It's one of the things that I was thinking of as I was preparing for our interview. And I should mention that you. Not only did you work for President Bush, you actually went on, you photographed the inauguration of President Obama.
Yeah.
I have a photo I want to ask you about with that. But was there, when you look back at your time at the White House, what do you have a favorite photo from that time, or a favorite moment that you always think about and think, wow, there was a lot of special things, but that was really special.
I think that one of the pictures that you actually mentioned or you thought you wanted to ask me about, and that was a picture of President Bush with his arms outstretched with the rain falling down. And, I covered a lot of historic moments there at the White House. Was with him on 9/11 when he came back to the White House on 9/11, and we traveled around the world. But he had a connection with Texas and working on the ranch. We all spent a lot of time out there, and I always try to find like extraordinary moments of really exceptional people, really famous people, and in this case, we as President Bush. And to me, it transcends so many different levels of presidential photography. It shows them in a real natural light and connected to the land and in the atmosphere of Texas. And it's something I've never seen a president with his in that gesture or his arms like that and the light and all. So to me, that was, I think, one of my favorites.
What was he doing at the time?
We were, we're all, not just he, but because he enlisted all the staff to go out and cut cedar and clear trees on his ranch. And so you could see that.
Did you,
staff
let me just, did he just say, hey guys, we're just going to go, we're going to start clearing some brush. Is that, I mean, how did that, is that just
pretty much. And everyone's like, well, we're not going to just sit around and watch him. We're going to go do it.
Right.
And, so we all were out there, and, what happened is that they were just wrapping up because there had been a drought and things were really pretty dry, and it was just a wetted up. They were burning some brush, so that's what that smoky type of feel is. And then a thunderstorm kind of opened up, and they needed the rain. So I think it was his kind of gesture, like thank God that the rain was coming, and letting it hit him on his face. It was anticipated a little bit, put myself in position where we were walking back. He was walking back to his truck just because it was kind of interesting with the smoke and the light and the rain. And then that moment happened. And so it was ready for it.
Do you remember what year that was when that photo was taken?
I think it was 05, 2005 or 2006. I'm not sure.
No, that's okay. I was just curious. I was just curious thinking about the time and place, because clearly it's such a moment, and it does. I mean, it reminds me of the cross. I mean, it does, the cross that we all bear in our lives in different ways. And you're right. The photo has so many different levels that you can take it, but it's a very authentic moment, and you can also tell that. So it's a pretty incredible photograph. And yeah, it's interesting to know the backstory and to also know that you were doing some hard labor.
Yeah.
While you were doing it. Yeah.
It wasn't a vacation at all when people talked about the Western White House, as they call it. He did a lot. I mean, it was his place to kind of go out and do work, do manual labor, and really be kind of distance himself with all the things that are going on in D.C. and just kind of have a little bit of peace. I know, doing something that's completely non-cerebral.
I want to talk a little bit about how you were able to then go from President Bush to then gaining the trust. And that's what you say again in your bio, gaining the trust of other presidents, because that's really, I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. These are very different people behind just their politics. So I'm curious about how that came together. But take us to the most recent photo that became a viral sensation.
Yeah.
Of you have multi-generations of presidents together in one spot. How did it all come together, and what went through your head when you were taking this photo?
That came together through, it was right before the funeral service for Barbara Bush in Houston, and that there was a reception held for all the guests, the VIPs, former presidents, former heads of state, family members of the Bush family, and they were all there to greet President Bush and to be able to talk to him. 41, George H.W. Bush, we call him 41. And so right then, all the people were coming in, and the chief of staff for 41, Jean Becker, her job was one of the toughest there, was to get everyone in order in line to go into the church. And early on, she said, well, we wanted to try to do a picture of the former presidents with 41. And I said, okay, that sounds like a great idea. And I kind of hinted like, well, maybe you can help get them all together.
Right. How are you supposed to just say like everyone gathering close? I can just sort of like a family photo.
Exactly. And she had people lined up. And so they were calling out orders of the way people were going to go in. And gradually the room became less crowded until it was just the pretty much the president's family and the former presidents and first ladies. And she just announced, okay, we were allowed to do a group picture of the former presidents and first ladies. And they all just fell right into place.
And they look sort of perfectly placed. In those situations, do you say, okay, on the count of three? Like, how do you tell them you're going to start taking a photo?
You just talk to them. Just let them know, say, okay, everyone right here. And they're pros when it comes to taking pictures. And they all, I mean, President Bush knew me, he knows me really well. I was just in Texas that week prior working for the Bush Center. For a conference they were doing. And then I've worked for 9 years for President Clinton at CGI. And so they all recognized me. And so it was just a matter of me saying, okay, here we go. And it just happened very, very quickly, maybe within less than 10 seconds. And it was just a natural type of thing for them to kind of all get together. They understand, I think all of them, especially President Bush, understands the historical significance of photos, and Mrs. Bush does as well. So they knew that would be something they all wanted to do for 41, to have that record, to have that moment that would live on. Because it may, well, who knows, and you know, hopefully not for a long time, but that might be the last chance for they're all together
sure.
in that way. And
sure.
so... it was just kind of a natural thing that after it happened, I was really grateful that we were able to do that. And then looking at the picture closer, though, it was really a really special moment because it goes back to what I said at the beginning. You look at everyone's eyes and they all have that sparkle and everyone seems very at ease there and is very happy to be there for him.
You're right. They're very present in the moment. When you look at that photo, do you think of, are you a critic of your own work? Do you think like, oh, I wish that this was different? What do you see when you see that photo? Because when we see it, we think, wow, look at all those people that had such an important impact on America's history. But I know what I'm like with my own work. So I'm curious what you do to your own photos.
Yeah. The first thing immediate was, I wish I would have moved President Clinton over a little bit because he was like, gosh, that's a dog. I wish I would have moved President Clinton over a little bit so he wasn't, right hiding behind, I think, Hillary there. And then also, there's a woman in the background, was one of the family members of the Bush clan, and I wish I would have moved over and kind of, I could crop her out, but when things come together, when things come together, you can't always tell people to move, you know.
I think your puppy's trying to tell you that you should be less, you know, critical of yourself.
I'm really just
being
bad.
That's sweet.
Do you want to do that again?
I think it's okay. I think people know that. It's just like you said, there's someone in the back of the photo or like there's some, like that's actually good. You have a cute little puppy. If he keeps doing it, he's going to get in big trouble. But other than that, no, he's good.
I'm going to pick her up right now. Hey.
I was curious how you went from being President Bush's photographer to then working for the Clintons and then also doing the inauguration pictures for President Obama. And if I could for a moment just reflect on something that you said, well, you know, the presidents, they all recognize me. Not many people can say that, Paul. I mean, not many people can. And that must be just a real trippy experience. I would think.
It's very wild. Yeah, I feel very fortunate that to be able to work for both and multiple presidents essentially. And, I think it's maybe a credit to who I am of not really wanting more
right.
for myself and then being at their service and not imposing anything on them or when I'm working for them. And that's probably why they work real well with President Clinton. And that came about after I left the White House to start my own business. They were looking for photographers to do things for President Clinton for CGI. And
that's
I got
the Clinton Global Initiative, right?
correct.
Their
Yeah,
foundation.
the Clinton Foundation's Clinton Global Initiative, and they had an annual meeting in New York every year. And so they said, "Hey, would you want to come, do some events for President Clinton?" And I'm like, "Do they know who I used to work for?" And I kept that. It was so silly because I kept it quiet. I never brought it up because, oh, they may find out I work for President Bush. And after a couple of years, and that's the political thing. And after a couple of years, I said, "Hey, why did you hire me?" He's like, "We hired you specifically because you work for President Bush, because you knew how to handle yourself around the president,
Right.
and you knew not to be all on top of him, not to shoot too many pictures, and always be there when he turns to ask for a picture." And something you learned years of covering the White House, and so that was just like a perfect fit. And before President Bush left office, I would do a lot of work for President Clinton, and then after President Bush left office, then I was doing work for both of them. And sometimes, usually 2 or 3 times a year, one week I work for President Bush and 1 week for President Obama, or excuse me, President Clinton. And then the inauguration came, and I was asked to photograph for the inaugural committee, National Inaugural Committee. And that was very historic. So I was really honored to be there. And so then a few years later, on one of the trips that the Bush Center did to Africa, which they've always asked me to cover, President Obama was there for a memorial service in Tanzania for one of the embassies that was bombed years ago. And so I got to meet President Obama in person there. And President Bush was joking about, "This is Paul. He's like one of the fastest bike riders, on my staff." And he goes, "Oh, I see how it works there. Whoever's the fastest gets to work next to you." And then he goes, "Oh yeah, kind of. That's the way it,
That's how it works.
that's true."
But it's also allowed you to see some interesting relationships. I thought this was an interesting quote that you said, and I wanted to learn a little bit more about it. You said when you were going back to the funeral for Barbara Bush, you said, "I was particularly interested in seeing President Clinton because I know that he had a special relationship since leaving office with the first President Bush." But I don't know anything about that relationship. What were you watching for?
Well, they had done work together for the tsunami relief way back, and I think in 04, they did trips together to Indonesia, and they developed a really close bond, a close relationship, from what I read. And the President Clinton would also, he talked about it, and he would go to Maine, he would visit with him quite a bit, and President Clinton would talk about it, how they have overcome, that was kind of a bitter, loss for 41. But then they realize they have a lot in common. They both raised kids through the White House, at the White House, and they became really, really close. So that I knew would be an interesting moment and something I was really curious. And I, following President Clinton around, he's very true to his emotions and his feelings about people he really cares about. And so that was definitely true there. And so I wanted to be there for that. And knowing that there would be a good moment, but also that would be another little, that would be a chapter to add, or a paragraph to their story, to see that, to see them together. And we can go back in time and hopefully look at that. And that will add so much, flavor to that story.
And we don't really think about, I mean, here the president shares the interesting experiences, even though they don't maybe share the same political beliefs. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you. Part of it, and here's a little bit of the backstory. A few years ago, I was at the White House for the very first time, and I saw this beautiful portrait of Jacqueline Kennedy. And I always thought, oh, I wonder who painted that, and I just sort of came in the back of my mind. And one day I looked up the artist thinking, oh, this painter must have passed away years ago, but I really want to know who did this. Well, it turns out that the painter, Aaron Schickler, was very much alive. And I called him on the phone and he picked up. And we ended up having this remarkable friendship for several years. I would go and talk to him about what he was able to see because he not only painted Jacqueline Kennedy, but he also painted Ronald Reagan and Nancy Reagan. And he, like you, was able to see to step across different political divides.
Right. Yeah.
And it made me really think that, you know, we don't really listen to our artists. We listen to a lot of people that have a lot of opinions that are really loud, but the people that actually have sat with our leaders and just sort of listened, we don't really talk to them enough. And what happens if we did? And so talking to Aaron, I mean, Aaron had a very specific political affiliation. He was like, Jenna, I'm a socialist. he was very like open about it, but he also had a lot of respect for the people that he painted, and that didn't bother them. They didn't, step in line with them. But you also alluded to that in a few of the conversations that you had, that, you know, the public doesn't get to see these people in the way that you were able to see them. And that in a lot of cases, they're very normal, which I think is hard for us to sort of imagine. But tell us a little bit about, I mean, what have you learned? Here are these, you know, we call them the leader of the free world. You've been in these moments of all sorts of type of moments with them. What do you think we should know about them, and, you know, how, not only how they behave, but who they are?
I mean, they are real people. The presidents, though, when they're in office, I know this from President Bush, the pressures are incredible. You know, that the things decisions he has to make, the reports that they hear about the threats to the country, are, I think, the reason why all the presidents turn gray. Mm-hmm. And I'm fortunate enough, they kicked me out of those meetings early on. And I respect that. And I actually, in a way, grateful, because those are the type of things that would probably be very scary, you know, to hear. So when they leave office, though, I remember I was with President Bush right after he left office. We did a surprise bike ride for him down at the ranch. I mean, the weekend after he left office, and I could see a noticeable weight lifted off his shoulders. And again, it's that in his eyes and his body language and everything. It was there. He was just gone. And they all have gone through that. When they're in the office, it's a very, very high stress situation. And I think they are remarkable people because they can deal with it surprisingly well. And because he would treat us and all the staff exceptionally well when we were there, knowing all those different things that he had to deal with, any president has to deal with. And I think for President Obama, President Clinton, it's the same thing. They manage such amazing stresses in their life, but they treat people really, really well. And that's what I saw. And so that's what I think is really exceptional about them. They're always appreciative of the people who want to be the best for them or sacrifice to serve for their administrations. They know how hard it is. President Bush especially, because he served different roles for his dad. And, you know, going into the White House, it was communicated to the chief of staff, Andy Carr, that, you know, we want you all to live in work this situation as hard as you can, because it's going to be very limited, and take advantage of it. So there was a certain graciousness about all of them that I find. And when the cameras aren't on them, the true personalities are there, and they're really exceptional people. And we base our opinions on the presidents about little, you know, snippets on the news. Personal politics and things like that. But what I found again was everything that people describe what President Bush was like, President Clinton was like, was just the opposite when I got there. So it's you can't. It's just the stress that they bear is really, really remarkable.
Does it change? The way that you think about the way the reporting is done now, you know, it's President Trump now, it'll be somebody else, you know, however long time. Has it changed the way that you watch the news or listen for the news because you've seen the difference?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I remember times being in the Oval Office when things were being talked about, and then seeing a story in the New York Times the next day, which it's like there's no attribution to what they are describing, what was going on in the meeting. I mean, there may be inferred, or maybe someone leaked it, which I kind of doubt in that administration. But I'm, you know, with the added degree in journalism, it's always about attribution. So who is saying what happened. Unless you have a direct quote, you can't make things up. Otherwise, it's an opinion piece, and that shouldn't be on the front page. And so, it's not always what you hear. And then, but also at the same time, being there, you are in a bubble. You know, you're working within the White House. You're working in D.C. The whole time, and everything that's kind of going on is seen through that D.C. filter. And I think what happened in this last election is that that bubble was pretty tight, and yeah. No one saw what was coming. And I think that's a problem about also that people think they know from what they're inferring about this and that. And I don't know how you truly get to know a president from the outside. Maybe read, be a voracious reader about everything about them and see different interviews. But even then, I don't think there's things we'll ever kind of get, well, the people will get to see on the outside.
Okay, I want to ask you about a couple of these different photos. Then I have a couple like rapid fire questions for you, which are never rapid fire. When a journalist says this, as you know, that never happens, like ever. But I still have some shorter questions. I am really curious about a couple of photos that I saw. One is of President Bush walking down a long hallway with red carpet. What's the backstory to that photo?
Well, he was walking to a press availability or press conference at the White House. And one thing I would do, what I brought to the White House was my way of covering a big events that I covered at the newspaper. And that picture was done with something I used to do at the Laker games in LA, which is with a remote camera. It's a camera placed in a location that a human physically can't be. But it has a perspective that we never get to see. Only the camera sees it, really. You know, the photographer never looks through the camera. The camera, for in that case, is preset, pre-focused, pre-composed, and then fired with this basically like a glorified garage door opener, you know, that radio control at the point where you think he's going to be. And that picture, what I always try to do with that is give a different perspective of kind of the commonplace or the ordinary thing we've always seen. And it also provides a real graphic image of the president in that environment. And with that red, I always like the real primary colors. And definitely the red carpet really jumps out in that it's kind of that sole figure. And you can read all kinds of things into that and what it means. And I like that. They have not like a definite. It's an opinion of what I think is going on or what I thought was interesting, and people can read into it. And that's kind of cool. I like that. So
did you ever get in trouble for any of the photos that you took where they were like, no, no, Paul, that one's not being released for whatever reason?
Yeah, it was, I think we were kind of held under tight wraps for what type of pictures we could release. And I have to say, I feel a bit of jealousy with Pete Souza with the great pictures he's released. Cause not to say that ours were better, but we had very similar moments of things that people thought they would, you know, be read the wrong way if we were released those type of things. I think they were a little more serious about what the presidency was, and so they wouldn't be released. And yeah, you kind of wish you would, because I think what we've seen from President Obama's book or Pete's book of President Obama, I mean, everyone reacts and relates to those moments so well.
And that, who would make the call, Paul? Like, who would be like, is it the director of photography? Is it the press secretary or the chief of staff? Who gets to make the call?
It was the communications shop. They are the ultimate ones. I mean, it would go through the press secretary, but the communications shop were the ones that decide visually what was going to go out there. Mm-hmm. And then again, also, we didn't have Instagram or Facebook to do it. We only had a website. And so the venue may not have been right, you know, on a website, because I'm not really sure, but they were always very, very conservative about how they portrayed them, which I can understand some points, but I think people would relate better. And what I found when people see my pictures, they go, gosh, we had no idea that these type of moments happen.
Right.
In the White House. And it's just too bad that no one got to see them then, because I think they would have a different perspective on who he was as a person, what he would do.
Where are the photos that you took? Do you have all of them, or are they, you don't have any of them? Do you have some of them?
I have copies of everything. They're considered presidential records. But the pictures that I have are been approved for me to have as just for promotional reasons. I really can't sell them. They are property of the people, really.
The people, they, right.
Yeah. The National Archives run, administer the archives that is, that are, in this case, in Texas, at the Bush Center or near the Bush Center. So they're all in place there.
And so you don't have, you didn't like, you didn't smuggle any out on a little zip drive in your bag? Because
I was pretty, hey, you know.
I know. Listen, I know.
You can't think you can get away with anything. And so it's just know, you know, they spend a lot on my background check, all of us there. Right. And it would be foolish to think that they don't know what I have. And
well, so I don't think you have anything incriminating, but it is interesting. I do wonder what it would be like you point out, if the social media wasn't what it was, and social media allows you to take a lot, much more risks, but also a very active storytelling in a different way as a journalist, but also if you're trying to put forward a certain image. I mean, as a person, you know, as a person. Rather than a professional. So I wonder if things would be different. And it was interesting looking back in some of the photos that you have. I did get a very similar feeling, which is, oh, you know what? I don't think I saw that of President Bush. That's not the image that I had in my mind of him.
Yeah.
Especially when he's with children and some of those photos that you have of him with children. It's just, that's not the image that you have. It's just not what was told.
Yeah, it's they're trying to create a narrative. Of what they think the president is, and the viewpoint can be kind of narrow, but
you know, is what it is.
That's what it is, and hopefully, you know, people are curious. They can go look and see some of the pictures that I've done, and see these type of moments that will give people a completely different perspective.
Yeah. So tell me about the inauguration. There's two pictures with President Obama. That I was curious about. One is that really lovely picture of Michelle Obama looking out the window.
Yeah.
And it's just a beautiful photograph. What's the backstory on that one?
That one's interesting. That was taken 5 years ago at actually the Bush Center. That is the opening of President Bush's library, and that is a replica of the Oval Office.
So she's not in the Oval Office there. I thought she was.
No, it's in Texas. I mean, you think if she was there when President Bush was in office, it would look exactly like that. And but it was interesting. She was very, very kind of intense in, you tell, in thought. And so she was totally unaware. I mean, we weren't alone in that room. There were other people around. But I found it really interesting how she spent a long moment looking out the window.
What was on the other side of the window there, if it wasn't the Oval Office?
Kind of like a small rose garden. They've kind of created like not a duplicate rose garden, but kind of a setup that's very similar the way the West Wing is designed. And so I think it's, you look out there, and it was very strange to go back in that Oval Office, because it's like, wait, I'm back in the White House, and it looks exactly like colors and everything exactly like that. So it was interesting, because I think that all the former presidents were getting together for that, and they were there. Possibly, you know, that maybe the Obamas were looking like, well, how could we do their library, President Obama's library, and what would they want to do with it? But it was a really interesting moment. That even though I was there for President Bush, I couldn't help but go that direction.
Yeah, she looks beautiful, and she looks deep in thought, and you wonder, well, what is she really thinking about? What's really going on? So I guess we'll never know unless she tells us, which I'm totally open to an interview if she is.
Yeah.
there is also a very cool photo from the inauguration that even now, again, says a lot, because it's Paul Ryan with Beyonce and Jay-Z, which is, again, you're not really pairing people together. It's like a wedding where you're like, how did we all end up at the same table? Yeah. But they have really, they're all had this very, and there's a few other people in the photo that I didn't recognize that I'm sure I should know, but they all have an interesting look. They're happy. All of them are happy in their own way. And it's a, were you just sort of spraying the crowd, or were you zoomed in on them directly?
Indirectly, that I was like, well, actually, in on them directly, and that was after President Obama had spoken or given his address on the second inaugural address, and it was I was what they call on the portico, like the over the shoulder angle that looks behind them, you know, out toward the crowd, and I always look for like juxtapositions of things and people, and when they go out, you can't really see, you only see the back of them, but when they turn around to leave, now they're facing you, and was just watching the characters that were there and the celebrities, the congressmen, and seeing if there would be some type of moment where they would meet or interact or be juxtaposed, just as when the presidents come out and greet people, you know, all the former presidents come out and do that as well. But I thought that was just kind of a weird kind of juxtaposition of personalities and people and all, and but that's what, yeah, I know that's what makes kind of
that's what makes the photograph
place, you know, the celebrities and the political celebrities at the same time.
Yeah, that's it's a very cool photo, another really cool photo. Okay, so let me ask you a couple of these kind of, I don't want to say rapid fire, but I am curious about what your answers are. Do you have a favorite person to photograph? Who's your favorite subject?
I would say, gosh, I don't know. It's not so much a person, but that people have like a magnetism to them, you know, mm-hmm. the people that are drawn in and that they can go from, you know, I would say President Clinton is one of my favorites because he will go through a full range of emotions in a few hours and is really good for doing pictures of people together, it's just something I've learned over time where that picture you want of them, a very intimate moment, he'll come in and be really, really close. And then rather than trying to work your way in there, I've learned just like, just be patient, give it 1 or 2 minutes. And then just by now he backs up a little bit and there's a great picture and people are always really drawn to him. And so I would say he's probably right up there.
It's funny. I've heard that even from his critics that say he's so charismatic that even for people that are around a lot of different charismatic people, you know, in politics, there's a lot of different personalities that have that chemistry that he, yeah. there's something that makes him very different that even if you're not sure you like him, you leave liking something about him because of the way he's able to connect with you.
Yeah. So yeah. And he's really, really, really good. And for all those reasons, it's just, everyone's drawn to him. And so he's always a really good subject to photograph.
Do you ever take, did you take any selfies with the presidents? That's the other thing. You're not in any of your own photos, Paul. So I'm
no.
curious if you were able to get any.
No, I've at the last Clinton Global Initiative meeting that they had, I was like one of the last people to get a picture with them. But I never want to put myself in there in that way. I feel very awkward about it. And, it's not my role to be a part of the picture. Because, you know, when people do that, they always end up in social media.
Yes.
And it's usually about the person and not the people they're with.
100%.
And I always have a respect for the president and the presidency that I'm not going to put myself on that same level. But when pictures come together, you know, I'm not going to say no.
Yeah, being reelected. That's good to know. I feel after so many years of spending in front of the camera, I don't like getting my photo taken and I'm always the one taking the photo. And I don't know why. It's not that I think it's for the same sort of reason that the reason I became a journalist is it's because I'm curious about the situations, not because I want to be part of them. I mean, that would put me in a different role. So speaking of social media, what do you think of all the editing tools that are out there? That was a question I had for you. And the filters that we can put on photos, you're shaking your head already. What do you think? I mean, are these great tools when you think of what's happening to photography? Or are they not good tools? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I think they're a way of making people believe that they're a good picture. You know, a picture that's something... because it looks as a cool color or something. And, you know, and part of what I do is do documentary style weddings. And, you know, that business, I've stuck with my way of doing it, which is to show a reality to things, you know, be kind of straightforward with the colors, the lighting and stuff, and try to capture it naturally. So what ultimately is important is what's going on in the picture to me. And if there's nothing going on, a cool filter doesn't make it better. it may catch your eye, but doesn't make what the content is any better. And so I think that's kind of my perspective on that, is that you have to see what's really going on, and is it interesting to you? And if it's colors and stuff, yeah, that's great. I mean, I think if anything, photography has been democratized, you know, with the cameras and the iPhones. I mean, I have an iPhone. I think it does an amazing job, but, you know, the moments of when and where you point the camera are still the things that make the best pictures. And that doesn't come with an app or anything like that. So,
you know, I bet people listening to you now, though, if you start looking at social media, exactly what you're saying is true, though, that it can be a really cool picture that a lot of people like, but the pictures where you can see someone's eyes or where they're really connecting to you, tend to be the ones I've just noticed are the ones that are the more popular ones, you know? And so it goes back to the real photography, something different than just the fancy stuff that's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's cool. It makes it look neat, but again, goes back to the eyes of whatever's going on with the person in their eyes is probably going to make it a good picture or not.
So what is your best or your most important piece of gear?
A good lens. I think that, you know, the cameras change pretty frequently, but a good lens is probably the most important piece of camera equipment you can have.
And what's your choice for a lens?
I 24 to 70 millimeter f/2.8 lens. And then maybe the number two would be a 35 millimeter 1.4 lens. That's a prime lens with you can't zoom in and out, because you can do just pretty much everything with that one. With either of those two lenses, you can do about, for me, like 95% of what I do with those two lenses. Because I like to be kind of close to the subjects and stuff, so I'm not zoomed in. And what I find doing sports, I did the LA Times back then, you use a little long lenses, which is kind of cool in a photo geeky type of way. But the subjects were so far away, you needed to bring them in, and you're so far removed from them that after a while I didn't like that. I like to be closer to people, and those lenses work the best for me.
What do you do with all your photos?
I try to keep them organized in a hard drive, and I learned that from the White House. It's like you had to be very methodical and take a lot of extra time to keep things organized as you're going.
How do you do it? This is something I struggle with. I know every single family struggles with it. Is there something that we could apply to our own lives? Because that would be a great tip. I really need some help.
I think the key thing is either have it done automatically with like your iPhone, you know, but invest in whatever the iCloud or the cloud-based backup system, you know, that at least keeps it, you know, say by date. You can check it by date or even location. Always have it automatically backed up. As you're going, because right now, I mean, everything that I shoot has to come out of the camera on the card into the computer because the files are so big. But the iPhones and whatever phone you have, you can have it done either Google, Dropbox, anything. It's keeping track of it automatically. And that's probably the best thing. You don't have to think about it, because what I have to do is I have to organize it as I'm going by date, you know, the subject and everything. And what I found, though, is every, you know, fifth of energy you put into saving it, doing it right at the beginning, it saves you 20 times the amount of time afterwards when you need to find it.
Yeah, I bet.
It's more valuable. It's tedious. Do it now as you're going, because once you try to find something, you'll give up.
It's not going to get easier, is what you're saying. So what is that? One of the questions I had for you too is what is the photo that you missed? Is there a moment that you're like, I missed that? Not even like you didn't take the right photo, but like you actually missed a moment. Do you have one that sticks out in your mind?
Oh, gosh.
I'm not trying to point out your flaws, Paul. I'm just curious.
I would have to go back. Here's the thing. It's like in the White House, when you're the only photographer there at an event, if you miss something, there's no one else to call you out on it. Whereas I remember very distinctly at the Sydney Olympics, I was there photographing that, and it was a boxing match. And the box, we came into the third round, and the boxer from, I think, Cuba was down like incredible amount of points. And so I didn't even change my film out. I put like a half roll in, or was a half roll in. And this is when it was filmed, so I only had 36 frames. And suddenly the guy knocks out the other opponent, and the guy jumps up on the ropes and is this incredible reaction. And as soon as that happened, the camera stops and starts rewinding.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm watching the whole thing, and actually I see it happening, and I put my face behind the camera because I didn't want to see it. And sure enough, I get back, and my friend from college worked at Newsday. He goes, "Hey, did you see the picture from this? Were you at this?" I go, "Oh no, don't show me." And it's a picture. So yeah, that comes right to mind. One of the biggest misses. Yeah. And yeah, I'm sure I missed stuff at the White House or wasn't there when things needed to be. That's always like a nightmare scenario. I still have dreams about tonight, or you know, today I should say, but I wouldn't say there's anything really big that I missed.
Gotcha. Well, is there, I guess a final question for you is, what do you do for fun? Like, is it, do you get to go out and just photograph people? Do you see people walking down the street and think, I really would love to photograph that person? I mean, how do you, is this as much a part of your life, your personal life, as it is part of your professional life?
Yeah, it is. And I live in New Orleans, and part of the reason I love to live here is to, document people and culture and colorful things that go on. And we had several moments, several reasons to celebrate. We have lots of reasons to celebrate here. And when people do, there always makes for great pictures. And so that's what I do for photographically fun, is doing that and going out and shooting for a day on the street or a parade or Mardi Gras Indians or music or anything like that. To me, I love, because it takes you out of the house, takes you away from the computer, gets you out in the world and interacting with people. And that's what I love to do that.
So this series of different videos and podcasting that I'm putting together is called Finding America. And Finding America is this idea I've been tossing around for a long time, where, you know, I think that we need to combine current events with a little bit more historical context and conversations with people that have actually been there behind the scenes or doing things that are part of our history that can give us a different perspective. And so that's what I'm calling it, Finding America. It's been in my mind for years. I've tried to develop into a program. It hasn't really come together. I'm still fighting for it, Paul. But this is the beginning of it. And I think our conversation is actually going to be the first episode, just so you know.
Cool.
So there you go. So when you think of Finding America and stories that lead us back home, and thinking about your place in American history at this point, when you think about finding America and what America means to you, what comes to mind?
It's really interesting. We are an incredible nation. We're so diverse. And I remember a couple of years of coming back from Japan on a personal trip, coming through Dallas in the passport control area. And they have all these pictures up around on the wall. Giant, it's not a mural, but huge wall with all these pictures, all of Americans. And it was stunning, because like, they were ordinary people, but they were so diverse. And our country, I think, is really, really unique in that way, where we're all a mix of races, colors, you know, cultures, but we're all still Americans. And I think we all like to be treated fairly and kindly. And I think the best of all of us comes out in the worst times. Or not the worst, I should say, but when we need each other, I think we come together. And maybe we're a little too comfortable in our opinions now of what we think is right and wrong. And, you know, hopefully nothing bad comes around soon that we need to kind of all come together, like a 9/11 or a Katrina or something like that. But I think we have such great freedoms here. You know, we're traveling around the world. You know, not to sound so rah-rah, but I still think we have the best country in the world. I mean, there's some great cultures around the world, but I think we have it in this country. And I think we kind of forget that, and we forget how good things are here. And so I think that's what I always find America to be really, really remarkable. It's a mix of incredible different people, that we all are Americans. I think that's what we forget sometimes. We so quick to criticize people, but you know, let's remember we're all part of an amazing country, but let's hopefully, you know, try to get along a little bit more and be a little nice to each other, like we've always been to the world and to people in need.
Well, it's interesting, just hearing what you said, and I promise I'll let you go after this, is that, you know, you've been able to witness these historical events, and now you've been, you do a lot of wedding photography as well as the other jobs that you have, these bigger jobs. And I was curious about that juxtaposition for you because, you know, the weddings are so special. It's such a moment in someone's life. And
Yeah.
it must be rejuvenating in a lot of ways to also be able to be a part of that. Those, because you know, I thought, oh, wow, he does wedding photography. I would have totally hired him to do my wedding. I mean, that's incredible that you could, that someone could hire you for that. But I'm thinking just on a personal level, it must be kind of cool to be able to see a lot of heavy things. You were just at a funeral, but also see, you know, someone at the beginning of such an incredible chapter of their lives.
Yeah, and that the you know, there's again universal emotions that we all feel, and it's great to be able to capture that for whoever can appreciate it and understand. They understand my talent and ability, and want me to bring that to them. And you know, people always say, well, how can you go from the White House to doing a wedding? And I go, you know, there's never going to be another White House. I mean, the White House is the White House, and you're not going to find something better or different, you know, that's going to equal it. So you kind of let that go. You appreciate it to its fullest, but then move on to the things that everyone likes or likes in me and my ability. So starting that record of that family's history there at that wedding is to me a big, big honor, because the president and first lady, they had me do that for their family. And so it's great to do it for other people who appreciate the style. It's not so set up. There's no filters or anything like that, but it's kind of a straightforward way of capturing their history and to be able to bring people back when they want to.
Do you ever think of putting together a book, or are you going to?
Well, I would like to, but maybe even do a book now. I mean, it's kind of coming into kind of clear focus about what the presidents have done after the office, because the ones in office, Eric has done a book on that, and I don't have maybe the archive to do that type of thing, but I think afterwards you can do kind of a very interesting book of what they have done, both presidents, or all the presidents have done afterwards.
Yeah, I think that'd be really cool, especially because now they're young and they're living. They're living a long time. They can do a lot. So that's really cool. And now they trust you. So that's great.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be calling you, Paul. Kids are, let's see, three and a half and two. So I'm a little bit away from the weddings, hopefully. But I'll totally call you. But thank you so much for the time. I really, really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Jenna. I appreciate it.
Hey guys, thank you so much for your support of smarternews.com. We really cannot do it without you. If you have any ideas for future podcasts or future projects, please reach out to us. info@smarternews.com. That's smart, HERnews.com. I'm Jenna. I'm grateful for you. Thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.